Hello, this is Kurt Benrud with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading movie reviews and theater previews. These are reviews of movies and previews of local theater that will be available with audio description. And so, here we go with the current listing of live theater, and all we have for the immediate future is Hairspray by North Carolina Theater, which is this Saturday. That's Saturday, July 30th at 2 p.m., and it's happening at Raleigh's Memorial Auditorium. They tell us that Hairspray will sweep you away to 1960s Baltimore, where the 1950s are out and change is in the air. Can a lovable, plus-size heroine manage to integrate a television show and find true love without ruining her hair? We dare you to stop tapping your toes to the rhythm of this joyful and infectious score. It's full of 1960s dance music and downtown rhythm and blues. The tickets for this range anywhere from $30 to $75. The number to call to make reservations is 919-831-6941. That's 919-839-6941. And it'll work best if you go to extension 6944. That's extension 6944. So one more time, the whole shebang. Area code 919-831-6941. Extension 6944. Now, taking a little bit of a further look down the road, The Secret Garden will be done by the Justice Theater Project, and it'll be sometime during the month of September. The date is still to be worked out, but it's based on the popular children's novel by Frances Hodgson Burnett. It's a Tony Award-winning musical, and it features a young girl whose personality blossoms as she tends to a neglected garden. Now, one reason for me bringing this up is that Justice Theater Project always offers pairs of free tickets to users of audio description, so it's worth considering. And also, we have a plan to actually read the novel on the air sometime between now and September. And I've always enjoyed reading a novel and then seeing the play that it's based on. So that's the story on live theater. Now, this weekend, we've also got another special thing going on at the North Carolina Museum of Art. In the outdoor amphitheater, they're showing the movie The King's Speech, and that's happening this Saturday evening, July 30th, and it's 9 p.m., and I'll be reading a review of that in just a moment here. And I apologize, it will be a little longer than a moment. I still want to get to the movies on the commercial screens, and I also need to mention that the Art Museum will be offering The Social Network, and that will be in August on the 19th at 9 p.m. That's a Friday evening. Now, part of why this is important is that the Museum of Art will be offering pairs of free tickets for users of the audio description service. So if you've got somebody that you think would like to attend The King's Speech on Saturday, July 30th, and or The Social Network on Friday, August 19th, rope them, tie them up, get them to drive you down there, because you each get a free ticket. And it's only $4 for general public, so get an organization to go on down. Okay, switching over to the commercial theater, the only one that's showing audio-described movies this week is in Raleigh at the North Hills Stadium. And the two movies are Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 and Friends with Benefits. Okay, now I'm going to give you the phone number for the North Hills Stadium, and then I'll give a little more information on the movies. The phone number is area 919-786-4494. That's 919-786-4494. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Part 2, it plays through the 28th, which is Thursday of this week. And then on Friday, Friends with Benefits opens, and it runs through Thursday of next week. In order to find the time for the movie. Of course, you'll want to call the theater to verify that you're coming at a time when they have that particular one showing. And the phone number one more time, 919-786-4494. So out of all of these opportunities, I personally endorse the movie The King's Speech because I have seen it. And I also personally endorse The Secret Garden because I'm in it. But anyway, The King's Speech, now once again, that's playing this weekend at the North Carolina Museum of Art. The cast includes Colin Firth, Helena Bonham Carter, Guy Pearce, Timothy Spall, Michael Gambon, Jeffrey Rush, Jennifer Ailey, Derek Jacobi, Max Callum, and James Curry. It's directed by Tom Hooper. It is a drama with a PG-13 rating. It runs 111 minutes, or just under 2 hours. They do have an advisory because of some language. Now, the short synopsis here. After the death of his father, King George V, and the scandalous abdication of King Edward VIII, Bertie, who has suffered from a debilitating speech impediment all his life, is suddenly crowned King George VI of England. With his country on the brink of war and in need of a leader, desperate need of a leader, his wife, Elizabeth, the future Queen Mother, arranges for her husband to see an eccentric speech therapist, Lionel Logue. After a rough start, the two delve into an unorthodox course of treatment and eventually form an unbreakable bond. With the support of Logue, his family, his government, and Winston Churchill, the king will overcome his stammer and deliver a radio address that inspires his people and unites them in battle. Now, Roger Ebert, the movie critic, gives this a rating of 4 stars out of a possible 4. He says, The King's Speech tells the story of a man compelled to speak to the world with a stammer. It must be painful enough for one who stammers to speak just to one other person. To face a radio microphone and know the British Empire is listening must be terrifying. At the time of the speech mentioned in this title, a quarter of the Earth's population was in the British Empire. And, of course, much of North America, Europe, Africa, and Asia would be listening. And, with particular attention, Germany. The king was George VI. The year was 1939. Britain was entering into war with Germany. His listeners required firmness, clarity, and resolve, not stammers punctuated with tortured silences. This was a man who never wanted to be king. After the death of his father, the throne was to pass to his brother Edward. But Edward renounced the throne in order to marry the woman I love. And the duty fell to Prince Albert, who had struggled with his speech from an early age. In The King's Speech, director Tom Hooper opens on Albert, played by Colin Firth, attempting to open the British Empire exhibition in 1925. Before a crowded arena and a radio audience, he seizes up in agony in efforts to make the words come out right. His father, George V, played by Michael Gambon, had always considered Bertie superior to Edward, but mourns the introduction of radio and newsreels which require a monarch to be seen and heard on public occasions. Now, as the synopsis said, the king does overcome his problems with the help of the speech therapist and with the support of his family and the government and the prime minister. And Roger Ebert gives this a total of 4 out of 4 stars. And once again, it plays this Saturday evening at the North Carolina Museum of Art. It's a 9 o'clock outdoor movie, and there are tickets that are available no charge to users of the audio description. You simply must call the Museum of Art and listen in here at Triangle Radio Reading Service during our news shows. There will be an announcement with the specifics on how to go about getting those tickets. And as far as the other entertainment for this coming up Saturday, it's Hairspray, and it's a musical with music by Mark Shaman, lyrics by Scott Whitman and Shaman, and a book by Mark O'Donnell and Thomas Meehan. based on the 1988 John Waters film Hairspray. The songs include 1960s-style dance music and downtown rhythm and blues. It's 1962 Baltimore. Plump teenager Tracy Turnbull's dream is to dance on the Corny Collins Show, a local TV dance program based on the real-life Buddy Dean Show. When Tracy wins a role on the show, she becomes a celebrity overnight, and then launches a campaign to integrate the show. Hairspray is a social commentary on the injustices of parts of American society in the 1960s. The musical's original Broadway production opened on August 15, 2002, and won 8 Tony Awards out of 13 nominations. It ran for over 2,500 performances and closed on January 4, 2009. It also had U.S. tours, a London West End performance, or production rather, a U.K. tour, and numerous foreign productions, and was adapted for a 2007 musical film. The London production was nominated for a record-setting 11 Laurence Olivier Awards, winning for Best New Musical and in 3 other categories. Now, once again, it is Baltimore in June of 1962. Pleasantly plump teenager Tracy Turnblad lies in bed. She muses about her love for her hometown, her love of dancing, her desire to be famous, and sings the song Good Morning Baltimore. She goes to school and is given a warning for inappropriate hair height. After school, Tracy rushes home with her best friend Penny to catch the local teenage dance show, the Corny Collins Show. And we hear the song, The Nicest Kids in Town. Edna, Tracy's shy and plus-sized mother, is ironing and complains about the noise of the music coming from the television, while Penny's mother, Prudy, complains about it being race music. After an announcement that auditions for a place on the show will be held, Tracy begs her mother for permission to audition. Edna, fearing that Tracy will be laughed at due to her weight, refuses. Penny and Amber, the main dancer on the Corny Collins Show, have similar arguments with their mothers, and we hear the song, Mama, I'm a Big Girl Now. After gaining permission and support from her father, Wilbur, Tracy auditions for the show and bumps into teenage heartthrob Link Larkin, which leads into a dream sequence, and we hear the song, I Can Hear the Bells. Velma Van Tussel, the racist producer of the Corny Collins Show, rejects Tracy from the show because of her size. And we hear the song, The Legend of Miss Baltimore Crabs. And he also refuses a little black girl named Little Inez. Back at school, Tracy is sent to detention for her monumental hair dome. There she meets black dancer Seawood J. Stubbs, the son of the host of Negro Day, Motor Mouth Maybell, who teaches her several dance moves. She uses the new dance steps at the sophomore hop the following day to introduce herself to Corny Collins, and we hear the song The Madison. When Corny sees how well Tracy can dance, he gives her a place on the show, and we hear again The Nicest Kids in Town. During the broadcast, Link, following Corny's suggestion, sings It Takes Two to Tracy, much to Amber's dismay. After the show, Mr. Spritzer, the show's worrisome sponsor, appeals to Velma over Tracy's appointment to the council. Velma, threatening to fire Corny from the show, is eventually left distraught and determines to ruin Tracy. And we hear the song Velma's Revenge. At the Turnblad house, Edna is receiving calls from fans who saw Tracy on the show. A call comes in from Mr. Pinky, the owner of a plus-size dress shop, looking for an endorsement. Tracy pleads with her mother to come with her and act as her agent, although Edna has not left their apartment in years. Finally making it outside, Edna is given a huge makeover, as she is told, "Welcome to the 1960s," and that's a song. Tracy becomes the spokesgirl for the shop. At school, signs of Tracy's fame are evident in the schoolyard with graffiti on the walls and another council member sporting Tracy's signature hairdo. During a game of dodgeball, a jealous Amber knocks Tracy out and Link rushes to her side. Penny and Seaweed, who have developed a liking for each other, rush to fetch the school nurse, only to find her out sick. Seaweed, suggesting that some fun would make Tracy feel better, invites all of them to his mother's record shop for a platter party. And then we have the song Run and Tell That. At the shop, Tracy rallies everyone to march against the station on the following day's Mother-Daughter Day, as blacks are not allowed on the show except for the monthly Negro Day. Before they start, Motormouth Maybelle convinces the initially reluctant Edna and Wilbur to march as well. During the protest led by Motormouth, Velma calls the police and fights break out. When the police arrive on the scene, everyone is arrested, and we hear the song Big, Blonde, and Beautiful. That's Act 1. In Act 2, we've got after the march, most of the women are locked up in the women's penitentiary, and we hear the song The Big Dollhouse. Because of Velma's dirty tactics, the governor pardons and releases both her and Amber. Wilbur bails out the remaining people, excluding Tracy, who is forced to remain in jail through another one of Velma's manipulations. Tracy is alone and wishes that Link could be with her. And we hear a reprise of Good Morning Baltimore. Back at the Hardy Har Hut, which is Wilbur's joke shop, Wilbur and Edna are left destitute because of the money it cost them to bail everyone out, and with Tracy still in prison. Edna sympathizes with her daughter's dream. She had dreamt of making her own line of queen-sized dress patterns. She and Wilbur reminisce about their past and how they can never be parted from each other. And we have the song, You're Timeless to Me. During the night, Link sneaks into the jail where he finds Tracy in solitary confinement. As Link and Tracy reunite, Penny's mother, Prudy, punishes Penny for going to jail without her permission and ties her up in her bedroom where Seaweed comes to her rescue. Both couples declare their love for one another, and we have the song Without Love. After escaping from their respective prisons, the couples seek refuge at Motormouth Maybelle's record shop. Tracy thinks that it is unfair that after all of their hard work, the Corny Collins show is still segregated. They devise a plan to help integrate the show, and Motormouth remembers their long fight for equality. And we have the song, I Know Where I've Been. On the day of the Miss Teenage Hairspray competition, Corny Collins starts the show with a song, It's Just Hairspray. Amber shows off her talents in a bid to get more votes from the viewers, called the song is Cooties. Just as the results are about to be announced, Tracy, whose hair is straightened as a sign of her, quote, nonconformity to the man, takes over the stage and is joined by Link, Penny, and Penny's now transformed from drool to cool, it says, also joined by Seaweed, Edna, Wilbur, Little Inez, and Motormouth. Tracy is declared the winner of the competition, and Corny declares the Corny Collins show to finally be racially integrated. When all is announced, Mr. Spritzer runs on stage, thrilled with the public's response to the telecast, and announces that the governor has pardoned Tracy, and he offers Link a recording contract, and Velma the position of vice president of Ultra Clutch, beauty products for women of color. Prudy arrives at the station and, seeing how happy Penny is with Seaweed, accepts her daughter for who she is. At the height of the moment, the company invites Amber and Velma to join the celebration. With the station in joyous celebration, Tracy and Link cement their love with a kiss, and we have the song, You Can't Stop the Beat. And so that's a synopsis of the show Hairspray, and to be perfectly honest with you, it sounds a whole lot more interesting than I thought it was going to be. That's, once again, this Saturday afternoon, 2 p.m., it's at Memorial Auditorium. It's by North Carolina Theater. And anybody interested in Hairspray, the number to call is 831-6941. That's 919-834-6941. And it's extension 6944. And now we'll go back to the movie, the one movie that's showing at the end of this week at at the Raleigh North Hills Stadium Theater. It's called Friends with Benefits. Roger Ebert gives this 3 out of a possible 4 stars. The cast includes Justin Timberlake, Mila Kunis, Patricia Clarkson, Jenna Elfman, Brian Greenberg, Richard Jenkins, and Woody Harrelson. The director is Will Gluck. It's a drama with an R rating. It runs 120 minutes, a.k.a. 2 hours, and the advisory is here for sexual content and language. Our synopsis: Dylan and Jamie thinks it's going to be easy to add the simple act of sex to their friendship, despite what Hollywood romantic comedies would have them believe. They soon, however, discover that getting physical really does always lead to complications. Roger Ebert tells us, Friends with Benefits follows rom-com, that is romantic comedy formulas, as if directed on autopilot. But that's not to say it isn't fun. This is the second movie this year to ask whether it's possible to have sex with someone without falling in love, and the second to arrive at a mistaken conclusion. Because, of course, it is. It's just not possible if you're Mila Kunis and Justin Timberlake, and the audience likes you and demands a romantic fade-out. I propose this as a rule. No movie with big stars and a big budget can allow them to enjoy big-time sex and then split them up at the end. The news about this movie is that it makes it clear that both Timberlake and Kunis are the real thing when it comes to light comedy. Since they earlier proved themselves in dramas, The Social Network and Black Swan, that must indicate they're the real thing in general. Now all they have left to conquer are comic book superheroes. The news about this movie is that it makes it clear that both... She plays Jamie, an executive headhunter in New York City. He plays Dylan, a hotshot art director for a website that gets 6 million hits a month. That allows him to work with an office full of employees. Now, Mr. Ebert says, my website gets more hits and has only one employee, but obviously Dylan's firm has a better head for business. Anyway, Jamie persuades Dylan to fly to New York and interview for a dream job, an art director for GQ magazine. He's cool to the idea, but she persuades him in one evening, during which she is about as charming as it's possible for one person to be, even if she's Meg Ryan. One dinner date leads to another. You know what's coming. They share that they've had bad luck with relationships. They swear they're not looking for a new one, and they agree to have pure physical sex with no emotional strings attached. This leads to activity under a blanket in which it's not difficult to figure out from the way things move around, under there, out of sight, what's happening. The scene is well directed, it's well written, it's well acted, and such scenes involve a good deal of comic ability. The formula now requires them to fall in love, to run into obstacles, to fight, to break up forever, and yada, yada, yada. Friends with Benefits makes this process more entertaining because the cast is populated with good supporting actors. Patricia Clarkson is Jamie's mother, an unreformed product of the sexual revolution. Richard Jenkins plays Dylan's father, who suffers from movie Alzheimer's. That's the form of the disease where the victim has perfectly timed lucid moments to deliver crucial speeches and then relapses. At the GQ office, Dylan makes friends with the sports editor, Tommy, played by Woody Harrelson, who is loudly and enthusiastically gay and commutes to work in a speedboat. That leads me to idle thoughts about Dylan's work on the magazine's website, where he features such story as How to Wear White Pants at a Cookout. I consider GQ a little too cool for that feature, but not entirely. In addition to an excellent feature on Mila Kunis, its website currently offers an update on plaid pocket squares. How I wear my pocket square really depends on my mood. Typically, I'm a standard, straight-across-fold kind of guy. That's a quote. But I stray. One of the movie's running jokes is that Dylan and Jamie know all the cliches from movie love stories and are too hip to fall for them in their own lives. This doesn't quite distract us from realizing their own lives are the embodiment of a movie love story. I guess that comes with the territory. What not every romantic comedy has, however, is good dialogue, well delivered at a fast clip. Kunis fast talks her way through the opening scenes as if she's channeling Juno, and Timberlake easily keeps up. And at some fundamental level, I simply enjoyed watching them and watching this movie. That was enough. And so once again, Roger Ebert gives this movie 3 out of a possible 4 stars. It's playing at the North Hills Stadium Theater opening this Friday evening. That's the 29th. And the number to call to get show times is 919-786-4494. That's 919-786-4494. And it plays through Thursday of next week. And another word on The Secret Garden, which once again the Justice Theater Project will be playing that in September of this year. And they will have an audio-described performance, and they will be offering free tickets for audio-description listeners. Now, it's based on the novel by Frances Hodgson Burnett, and it tells the story of Mary Lennox, a lonely little girl who is sent to live with her Uncle Archibald in Yorkshire, England, after being orphaned by a cholera epidemic in India. Still grieving over the loss of his beloved wife, Lily, who died 10 years earlier during childbirth, and distraught over the condition of his bedridden son, Uncle Archibald casts a dark shadow over the manor until Mary discovers a secret garden that had once belonged to Lily. By nursing the garden back to life, Mary somehow restores life to her grieving uncle and her and his sick son. Now, Mary moves from India since being orphaned after her parents were taken during a cholera epidemic. She realizes she has to do her best to make do, and she discovers this secret garden hidden away that only requires some attention to bring it back to its once thriving self. She quickly befriends her sickly cousin and also enlists help from the various groundskeeping staff to bring the garden alive. Along the way, she learns a great deal about her new world and about herself. As the book focuses more on the children of the story, the musical theater piece focuses on the adults, including Archibald and his relationship with others, specifically having a hard time with moving on after losing his wife. The show moves back and forth between the present and past, and we learn more about Archibald's state and eventual acceptance of the circumstances placed upon him. We also see Mary grow over the course of the show as well, accepting her new calling. People from the past make their way into the story, giving us a better sense of the world where this takes place. And one thing for me to toss in here before I close is that I know that there will be authentic Indian music as part of this particular production. But what I have to tell you is we're kind of running out of time for this episode of Movie Reviews and Theater Previews. I'm Kurt Benbrood for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Thanks for joining me today, and come back and check with us again in a couple of weeks. Hope you enjoyed it. Take care.